Okay. Again, thank you all for coming and being the fabulous audience that you are, poets that you are, many of you yourselves. Well, I didn't put a plant or suggest this to Arlene, but somehow she's right. I want to read a number of portrait poems in gratitude or recognition of what some individual lives have meant to me. I'm inspired a little bit by someone who's sitting next to me here who's done a lot of portrait poems that we have really been appreciating a lot, and that's Joan. So, some of these individuals you will know, and some I will have to introduce to you. So I will start reading a poem called The Poetry Therapist. I just rediscovered it, and it's in a publication that the Squirrel Hill Poets produced in 1992, and here it is, and you'll hear more about that on June the 6th, or you will even see some of these things at the Heinz History Center and Archives. The Poetry Therapist. He was a Pittsburgh-born poet and a hypnotist who was at Indiana University of Pennsylvania, and it's when poetry therapy just started. So, the Poetry Therapist. Yes. I remember your story about the captain's son. He lived in Squaw, Michigan, on the base with his dad, who made him salute every morning and polish his shoes every night. This dad hit him when he couldn't perform, just like those stories we hear on TV news. Some of those kids became snipers on towers or wear their mother's dark underwear. But that catatonic boy punished himself until you told him, "Listen, poetry might ease your pain." Then in a circle, he began to talk. Little words at first about a pet bird, about all the schools that made him carry a rifle in the academy. You said it made you so happy. He was talking. You wanted to hold him in your arms. You said by then he understood he didn't have to live in the past. By then he didn't need any more rescuing, stopped asking if you had a mobile home for him to live in. But when he was almost out the hospital door, he came back to salute, of all people, you, Heil Bob, and he couldn't get past the door, since no therapy, no poetry in all the world could conjure up a firing squad to do away with his bad fathers. No one can stop this second rocking now in the shame and prison of our hearts. Thank you. And it was remarkable work to see in process. The magic of naming, and this is a Galway reference. Again, where's Anne? Okay, and this is Galway Canal. So this is someone you do know or might know. The magic of naming. Galway, we should have danced you, made off with your geography, understood that you're a name for a place, like Georgia and Toulouse, stripper and painter, or Florence who tended the wounded and the sick. If sons and daughters were names for homelands, I would be my parents' Yanina, Yanina de Meos, which translates into Lady John, granddaughter of Victor, a tree in the mountains, and Rosina, his wife, who learned to grow children around him. When you return to Pittsburgh, we'll study Irish and Greek ground. We'll study everybody's names until veins like roots reach down and Venice and Jerusalem stand up. And this is a poem that recognizes my doctor, who used to be in Pittsburgh, has now 7 books and doesn't live here anymore, and I don't have a doctor. Oh, the two worlds. When I speak to him of two worlds, the real and the other, you ask for my preference. Ask me whether I like sleeping or eating better. My friend, the poet, who is also a doctor, doesn't know how he does both, since he is mad for life, and he protests. He says it's the same. One world, when I give a nervous laugh and go off to teach at a university. The real world, the real world. Not having what to eat or a fatal disease, not being able to see the other. Not having what to eat or a fatal disease, not being able to see. I tell him, he is not crazy enough to be a poet. He says, you don't know me, and bends to listen to my chest. Thank you. The program. Some of you know this poem. I've read it very often. Mother Teresa says when asked how she does it, come see, as she strokes the face of a twitching child until the convulsions stop. And it is the image that we carry forth of a great fish out of the water, the gone perfume carrying on with gone colors. The gone perfume carrying on with gone colors, every mere child under mercy. The sway of this imperative swings forth like a flower breaking underwater. The politics of ordinary men and language not up to a gesture of seeing, but catching on. These lives become like biography, not so important, like the image of that fish out of water, transparent. The passion of belief could save us if everywhere we could hear the sounding of the broken body of a child and watch someone like this mother stumble through the boundaries of desert to save us, whether we, past rubble and metals, believe in a reason to be saved or not. And here is Peggy Guggenheim in Hokkaido of the Guggenheim family, the famous museum connection and other things. This was quite an entourage. And I was very privileged to join this group as a student. Peggy Guggenheim in Hokkaido, which is the Alaska of Japan, and this is before the Olympics, the first Olympics took place there. Giantess in Hokkaido, land of the hairy Ainu, no one had seen a woman like you, white hair, chinchilla coat, towering above the guides. Still, I had to pay in that fish restaurant in Japan where it was clear we would never exit, unless I did. We slept on tatami mats while John Cage drank sake and Yoko went off with Tony then in a chartreuse coat she wore all the time, breaking her agreement in the 60s, too late for that promise, not to offend her family. I meant to send her these souvenirs as a holy record. My nephew stole these black and white photos from my house to take to private school, hoping they would suffice to register him as cool. But he didn't know a thing about your museum in Venice, your son Sinbad, Duchamp, Ernst, your family's millions, or that anyone could drink so many small cups of sake. Later, I would return to New York and you would bestow on John Cage an electronic studio, all this before the day Kennedy was shot or Yoko was smitten with Lenin. And you, the Japanese believed were bear or goddess, refused to sit on the floor or bathe naked in the baths with us. Okay. And I think I'll close here. I wish I had something really humorous, but I don't think this is necessarily that. This is a poem for my hairdresser who was once upon a time the real Philip Pelosi. I do not know where he is at the moment, where he is at all. Poem for my hairdresser. Press hands, the anointing message, you move your energy. Beauty baskets for the hungry. I come to you with sick hair. You talk about your daughter, a little straight-haired girl who wants to save the world. She knows you are a good man, but you don't want to feed your magnificent fortune to carp. My hair is stained, your child is saving dolphins. I ask, why can't we use vegetable tints all the time? She sends you the best articles on the homeless. You tell me about chemists in Tennessee and Ohio, I say, tell them, O beauty man, to help find out what's eating the slow universe and my hair. So, one little afterthought, it's called hubris. The cap on the table, there isn't one. The cap on the table barks at the man who thinks it's his, falls off his head. As soon as he puts it on, a hat is to remind you how properly little you are and where your end is. So, thank you.